From the Land de Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 11th day of November 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the agricultural commodity markets with Matt Bennett at agmarket.net, the weather forecast with Mike Tenura of T-Storm Weather, take a look at the agricultural news for the day, and we'll hear some information that came out of Representative Bustos' office and the press conference he held yesterday as it's related to the infrastructure bill passed by Congress last week. Bustos, of course, sits on the Ag Committee and is a representative from the state of Illinois. And we'll hear all of that right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn today settled a quarter higher at $5.69.5. The March at $5.78, three quarters lower. May corn at $5.82.25, down 1.25 cents. January soybeans at $12.21.5, 4.75 cents higher. The March at $12.33.25, up 4.25. November beans at $12.25, 0.75 cents higher. Bean meal futures at $3.44.52. $10 higher for the afternoon. The bean oil at $59.14 unchanged. Wheat futures soft red, 9.5 cents higher, $8.12.5 the settlement price. The hard red at $8.28, up 10.5 cents for the afternoon. Live cattle futures at $136.40, down 42.5 cents. Feeders at $159.75, $1.25 higher, and lean hogs at $75.37.5, down 32.5 cents for the day. Crude oil at $81.36 a barrel. That's up 2 cents. Diesel fuel or heating oil at $2.44.4, just about 0.7 cents lower. In gasoline, a penny and 0.9 cents higher, $2.31.7. Matt Bennett from agmarket.net now joins us to discuss what happened in Chicago for the day. Hi, Matt. Thanks so much. Give me your quick overview of trade.
Well, you know, this week's just kind of been one of those things where one day it seems like corn's leading the way, one day beans seem to lead the way, and you know, obviously the report this week was friendly towards soybeans in that, you know, the yield just didn't end up near as high as what the trade was expecting. Now carryout actually was an increase, it just wasn't near as much, you know, as what the trade thought it might be. So, you know, overall the report was actually fairly neutral both. It just wasn't as bearish as the trade was expecting, and so beans led the way, you know, and then you turn around yesterday and corn led the way, and then come in here today and you know, corn didn't do a whole lot, we were down just a little bit, whereas beans were able to gain a little bit of ground. So just kind of been an interesting trade this week, and you can't really figure it out necessarily, but it's you know, it's definitely been a better week than what a lot of people assumed coming into this report.
Is the trade taking time at the moment to think about the politics of agriculture?
One of the main things that I saw today is that the trade is banking on, for instance, you know, this renewable fuel situation to essentially be more advantageous than what it was under the last administration. It'd probably be the easiest way to put it, but, you know, no waivers granted, if you will, or at least minimal. And so, you know, there's no question that there's a lot going on from a political standpoint. You know, the other thing that we've already talked about, of course, is this renewable diesel situation. So, you know, right now, your crush on soybeans and your ethanol grind for corn has just been nothing short of fantastic. And, you know, if we could continue something like that, and it sure looks like that's something we should be able to count on, you know, if the administration doesn't put a monkey wrench in there. You know, bottom line is you could see some really good demand moving forward, especially whenever you start talking about this renewable diesel, soy oil, if you will. There's a lot of good things that could be coming here over the next 18 to 24 months.
Enough that it would push price higher or be supportive of where price is at this point?
You know, to be honest with you, when we're talking renewable diesel, it's a little farther down the road, you know, but what it is something that the trade can expect moving forward and something that the trade can kind of say, hey, you know, we're not going to be able to just squash this bean situation. And so I guess my personal opinion is that, you know, probably a little more friendly corn, given everything that we're looking at from an input standpoint, given input availability standpoint. You know, I've got to think that acreage should be fairly strong whenever we're looking at the soybean situation this next spring. Whereas on corn, I think it might be a little bit tougher to come by, especially with some of these folks talking not a whole lot of relief by springtime, a lot of $1,300 to $1,500 quotes for anhydrous right now. You can still pencil a profit, and I know FarmDoc team's done some good work there, but I as well as I do, Todd, that producers start to get a little gun shy when you're talking about $1,000 plus anhydrous, and I just don't expect them to go whole hog on that.
Let's turn our attention to the corn market between now and the end of the year. I'm wondering whether there will be opportunity there where end users, elevators, will need to go looking for corn that's been locked up in the bin or even just in the elevator and hasn't been marketed at this point, and whether that might offer some opportunity for producers to market a crop, even if they don't take the cash until the following year for tax purposes.
Yeah, I mean, right now, for instance, right in our part of the world, there's been some awfully strong basis pushes. And so, it's been very interesting to see right here at the end of harvest, basis is pushing 30 cents over, and that's not typically something that you see with a record crop. I mean, it's just not, it defies logic. But we came in at such a tight situation. And I think especially in some regions where maybe the corn crop isn't maybe as much of a bin buster. I mean, it's obviously quite large everywhere, but as much of a bin buster as maybe they were expecting. I just don't think that end users have been able to originate the corn that they thought they would be able to. And so, what I've been trying to tell producers is that, yes, I understand that we all want to kind of hold on. Last year, it made a lot of sense to hold on. But when you're printing a $6 price at some of these end users right now, with some producers that quite frankly had a record corn crop, it's tempting fate, in my opinion, to completely ignore that.
How should they deal with it? I know you said tempting fate to ignore it. How do you set them at ease that they should go ahead and make that cash sale?
Well, Todd, if you called me and said, hey, Matt, I had 250 bushel corn this year, but I don't know if I want to sell at six because I think it's going to seven, I'd probably hang up on you. But, I think you got to sell some corn. That doesn't mean you sell the whole thing. But if you want to actually keep ownership of corn, I understand that sometimes it helps the producer go ahead and make that step, to go ahead and sell the corn because they know that they can still participate in at least some sort of a level of a rally. So let's say you're selling corn today at $6 because of a 25, 30 cent over, basis or better. If that's your situation and you didn't even know if you'd have option price, go out and spend 20, 25 cents on that strategy. And in all honesty, your basis is paid for your strategy. You're not going to be paying storage on it until May or July, whenever your strategy is going to come to fruition, and then you can still participate at least in some level of a rally. So if that's what it takes to get you to sell the cash bushels at an extremely profitable price level, I'm okay with doing it on a portion of those bushels you're selling.
Do farmers for next year's corn crop need to think about covering their expenses with cash sales at this point?
That's a great question and something that I like to talk about a lot of, let's lock in at least some of our fertilizer costs. If we're going to go ahead and make that commitment there, pay for the fertilizer, lock it in, then sometimes we need to step in and sell some corn as well. So yes, absolutely. I think selling some corn makes sense. We haven't been super aggressive just yet. To be quite honest with you, I think that you could see the corn market as far as the D's 22 trend towards the $6 and above level by springtime. Now, I'm not going to hold out for all my bushels there. And as you know, I like to sell in increments. So we've already begun our pricing program, and we're going to continue to sell incrementally. So I think anytime a producer can get $5.50 out of the field for next year, I'm probably going to increase sales, I would say, to at least a third. And if we can get to where we've got a $6 print on the board, I'm probably going to be pushing those sales even farther. So there's no doubt we can make money with these high input costs and corn where it is. But at the same time, I think we've got to give this market a little bit of chance to play out and not get too jumpy, cover some of those costs, but maybe not get terribly aggressive and put all our eggs in one basket.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
You have a good day. That is Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, something we have not heard about for a while, renewing a ban on imports of U.S. pork with the meat leanness additive ractopamine is on the table in a December Taiwan referendum that could have far-reaching impacts on U.S.-Taiwanese trade relations. Taiwanese voters go to the polls next month to decide whether to reinstate a ban lifted by the Taiwan government on the imports of U.S. ractopamine-treated pork. The issue is a political, quote, hot potato, unquote, for health-conscious Taiwanese voters and the large domestic pork industry. U.S. Taiwan Business Council Chief Rupert Hammond Chambers has this to say about it.
President Tsai's willingness to invest political capital in following through on a Taiwan commitment is advancing the U.S.-Taiwan economic relationship in totality. And of course, pork is a small part of a very large strategic economic relationship.
Including sales of U.S. corn and soybeans, military arms, and Taiwan's exports of steel and computer chips that help power the U.S. economy. But lifting of Taiwan's U.S. pork ban can only be turned back if a majority votes against imports.
If it doesn't meet that criteria, then the referendum is null and void. It is a political concern, though, for President Tsai. If President Tsai receives a trade defeat domestically on this issue, it will have ramifications for U.S.-Taiwan relations, for sure.
The issue is so important to Taiwan's president and party that they've started a countrywide campaign to drum up support for lifting Taiwan's U.S. pork ban 8 years after lifting a similar ban on U.S. beef. Well, let's stay with the meat industry. The North American Meat Institute says the Grassley-Fisher bill to improve fairness in the cattle market ignores the analysis of beef cattle markets by the country's leading agricultural economist. Further, the organization says the bill's mandated government intervention will have unintended consequences that could hurt livestock producers and consumers. NAMI President Julie Anna Potts says, quote, we're in a rush to do something. This bill would replace the free market with the government mandates and harm those it's intended to protect, livestock producers. According to one independent analysis using USDA data, since August, prices for producers have been well above the five-year average and above prices in 2020. The Cattle Price Discovery Act is seen as a compromise between lawmakers to return, quote, fairness to the cattle marketplace, dominated by four major meat packers. North American Meat Institute members process the vast majority of U.S. beef, pork, lamb, and poultry. We'll stay with the food complex. The Consumer Price Index increased 0.9% in October on a seasonally adjusted basis, after rising 0.4% in September, the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported yesterday. Over the last 12 months, the All Items Index increased 6.2%. That's the largest 12-month increase since November of 1990. The food index increased 0.9% in October, the same increase as in September. The food at home index increased a full percentage point over the month, as all six major grocery store food group indexes continued to rise. The index for meats, poultry, fish, and eggs continued to rise sharply, increasing 1.7%, following a 2.2% increase in September. And finally today, a White House fact sheet says the bipartisan infrastructure deal will improve the supply chain. The report says the infrastructure legislation will make fundamental changes that are long overdue for the ports, airports, rail, and roads to ensure supply chains are more resilient and efficient from future shocks. According to some rankings, no U.S. airports rank in the top 25 of airports worldwide, and no U.S. ports rank in the top 50 ports for efficiency. The legislation invests billions in port infrastructure and waterways and billions in airports to address a variety of issues as well. By the way, the ports of Long Island Beach and Los Angeles, which import 40% of all containerized imports into the country, are handling the most in their history, a 17% increase over their previous record year. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Illinois Representative Sherry Bustos, a retiring Democrat from the 17th District of the state, held a press conference this week highlighting the just-passed infrastructure bill and how it will impact agriculture. As she was joined by a series of national and state organization reps to explain what farmers and rural Americans can expect in the coming years. Bustos started with the $110 billion that will be poured into the nation's roads and bridges.
That's going to help our growers and our producers get their goods to market. Hogs transported from farm to the processing location. It'll help trucks move faster by fixing bad roads and bridges that are tough. Illinois specific, we've got just under $10 billion for federal highway projects. We've got about 6,200 miles of highways that are considered in poor condition in our state.
Bustos notes there's another $1.5 billion for bridge replacement and repairs in the state. She says 2,400 bridges in Illinois are in need of some form of update. Nationally, the infrastructure bill also includes some $16.5 billion for the ports and waterways. The president and CEO of the Waterways Council, Tracy Ziem, also online at the Bustos press conference, called the bill a once-in-a-generation opportunity.
$2.5 billion was provided for lock construction and modernization projects. This $2.5 billion should be able to start the Navigation Ecosystem Sustainability Program, which Congresswoman Bustos has been a very long-time supporter of, and we're very appreciative of that. So the two locks that are most likely to get fully funded out of the NEST program will be Lock and Dam 25 on the Mississippi River and LaGrange Lock on the Illinois. These two locks are specifically important for America's farmers because the majority of export for soybeans and corn transit through these locks, but also the agriculture inputs that the farmers rely on come north through these locks.
The Waterways Council is the only national organization that advocates, lobbies Congress, on behalf of its members interested in the inland waterways, including the lock and dam infrastructure. Tracy Z made note during his comments that the funding for the lock and dams will create some 50 million labor hours worth of construction jobs for the steel building trades. On that building note, another $65 billion of the infrastructure bill will go to build out broadband internet activity nationally. Illinois will get some $100 million of that figure. Ron Moore lives and farms in western Illinois, about halfway between Peoria and the Quad Cities. The past president of the American Soybean Association doesn't consider his home to be in the middle of nowhere. Still, the internet on his farm in Roseville is poor at best.
For my own personal experience, we don't live in the middle of nowhere in western Illinois, but we only have a download speed of 5 megabytes of data. And to get the broadband up to 100 megabytes of data would be a huge, huge improvement for our farming operation and also for the rest of the rural America that need that in that kind of internet service.
Ron Moore, the farmer, notes one of the nice things about the infrastructure bill is that it spends money, he says, to maintain the nation's competitive advantage over the farmers that raise corn, soybeans, and livestock across the world. Hey, check us out online at willag.org. This evening, you'll find there later after 6 o'clock, our Commodity Week program. We'll record that this afternoon with our panelists Kurt Kimmel, Wayne Nelson, and Dave Chatterton. Let's check the weather forecast now with Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hey, Todd, it's great being here.
It's the time of year where we really transition to focusing on the South American crops. Can you give me your assessment of the growing season so far and your expectations for the future?
Well, so far it's been going very well. In Brazil, there's been a lot of rain to open the first 5 to 8 weeks of the growing season, and that's why they're doing so well on planting, with most of the corn and soybean crops having been planted on time. In Argentina, soybean planting is just starting, but they've seen a mix of dry and wet periods, and so even though you might argue it's a little bit dry in a few different areas, overall, this is a pretty nice start to the growing season. And as we move forward, it looks to be a pretty nice mix of weather as well. The only concern we have is that we do have a La Nina that's developing and it's intensifying. And there is historical support for this type of La Nina to lead to droughts in Argentina and southern Brazil. We have seen some flashes of dryness here and there, but they've always been met by rain and thunderstorms, and it's always more or less negated any of the concerns that we've had. So we're going to get through another week or 10 days with the same type of scenario where it's drying out, but there is some rain coming up, and that will keep things pretty quiet through the middle of the month. Once we get to the end of the month around Thanksgiving and a little beyond that, if history starts to repeat, we'll start to dry out. So December is going to be an interesting month to watch. But for the moment, all is pretty quiet.
Here in the United States, it's been quiet, I suppose. A little wet today. What do you think about conditions for wrapping up harvest season?
Well, temperatures will be a lot colder, so that ground is going to harden up, and that will take care of any of the wet areas that we have, although it's not going to be super cold, just temperatures dropping into the mid and upper 20s at night, and then the low 30s on the warmer ones. We will see some rain today, as you're noting, that's moving away from us right now. And there will be a pretty decent snow in the Dakotas and Minnesota over the next 24 hours. Now, that's going to make things a little bit challenging from a harvesting standpoint and even from a simple roadway logistics standpoint. It's not so much because of heavy snowfall, but it's a combination of light snowfall with very gusty winds in the Northwest Corn Belt. We'll see northwest winds gusting at 45 to 60 miles an hour later on today and through tonight. And that's why we'll see a logistics disruption. It does get quiet after the system wraps up and moves away with the next rain and snow about a week out. But that one doesn't look all that impressive. So at the moment, there's not a whole lot happening in the U.S.
And then in Australia, we've been watching the wheat crop there should be harvesting. There's an awful lot of rainfall. What do you think about conditions going forward?
Well, they have seen a fairly poorly timed rain event over the last 24 hours. And the reason being that this is the third rain event in eastern growing areas of Australia over the last 10 days. And so even though it wasn't all that wet leading into this period, it's not the ideal setup you'd like, because once harvest gets going, you want it to be dry, and instead, we've been wet. The other thing that's been taking place in Australia, and the story remains to be seen, is that it has been very cool over the course of the growing season. And relative to normal, the next 7 to 10 days will very likely be the coolest period of the entire growing season. Temperatures anywhere from 10 to 20 degrees below normal. And this is happening because polar air near the Antarctic is sweeping far to the north. And so we'll just have to keep an eye on that and see how that helps or hurts their wheat crop in the end. But it is going to be drier for the next 7 days, and that will at least take that pressure off.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd. Great being here.
That's Mike Tenera. He's with T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.